On today's episode, Liz and I welcome Ted Lowe to the show. Ted is a passionate presenter, resource creator, believer in marriage, and is the author of three books, including Us in Mind. Together, we dive into the power of thinking our way to a better marriage, starting with the thoughts in our own heads, which he calls challenging the Fred in your head. We also discuss how we think about and respond to our partner can affect our attitudes and behaviors. Ted Lowe graduated from Fuller Theological Seminary and speaks regularly on the topic of marriage. He works with the team at Family First in creating resources to strengthen marriages and families. He's married to Nancy, and together they have four busy kids, and Ted believes that you can change your marriage by first changing your thoughts. We hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection. I'm psychologist Dr. Liz Hale, along with the esteemed professor, Dr. Dave Schramm. Together, we have dedicated our life's work to bringing you the best we have in valid marital research, along with a few tips and tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Okay, Dave, so let me tell you, one of the best things I can do for my marriage is to change my mind, all right? Now, not on my marriage.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, but on my thinking about my marriage. Our guest today, Ted Lowe, believes that if you change your thoughts, you change your marriage, or really any other relationship for that matter. Welcome to Stronger Marriage Connection, dear Ted.
Thank you guys for having me.
It's such a pleasure. Your book, Us in Mind, has been a popular one for my clients to read. So I just want to thank you for that, for putting my thoughts down in your book. We're very like-minded, Ted, so it's nice to find a mutual soul there. You know, the research behind this is really fascinating. It turns out great marriages are not just the opposite of struggling marriages. Please tell us how they're different.
You know, you guys, for some reason in 2020, I had a little extra time on my hands. I won't say why, but I really wanted to dive into this question. I'm like, what are couples doing that are crushing it? Like, what's going on with them? Because so much of the marriage research is about couples that are struggling, which is so important. We all know. But I wanted to know, are couples that are doing it great, are they doing something a little bit different? And so they came back with this amazing study, lots of studies actually, that says that happy couples just think in a way that unhappy couples don't. And so everybody's listening right now and maybe going, well, good for the happy couples. Well, good news. Spoiler alert. This is good news for all of us. But it turns out that, you know, when you start thinking about the common denominators of couples that were happy, it turns out, again, they just think in a way that unhappy couples don't. And they see things from a different lens. And one of my favorite studies was they gave couples basically spouse report cards for their spouse. And they were asked to rank them on things like generosity and kindness and patience. And what they found was the common denominator were couples who ranked their spouse higher in every category than their spouse had ranked themselves. And I tell couples all the time, it's kind of made up of two people that look at each other and say, I just wish you could see you like I see you. And in this, I was speaking about this in an event, and a lady who comes up, she said, we've been married 50 years. And my husband says all the time, I just wish you could see you through my eyes. And I was like, okay, I can die a happy man right here. That's it. And so they just have an ability to focus. One study by Dr. Helen Fisher says that they have the ability to focus on what they do love and not focus on what they don't. Right. And I always have to be careful with that. Alarm bells go off. You know, we're not talking about anybody having rose colored glasses about any type of abuse whatsoever. But this is different, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's exactly. I love that. That where our focus, and Liz, you said this a ton here on the podcast, what we focus on grows. Yeah. What we focus on grows.
I love that.
Ted, we also respect, you know, Carol Dweck's research, her work on growth mindset versus a fixed mindset that you refer to in your book, Us in Mind. Please tell our friends here more about that concept and how you believe it relates to improving marriages.
This is one of those aha moments for me after doing this for 20 years when I read her research on this idea of growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And it did a lot of explaining for me, because for 20 plus years, I couldn't understand why some people would read a marriage book or go to a marriage event or conference, hear the content and go back and change things, while others heard the same content, was at the same event, yet made no changes. I thought, what are the difference? Or, you know, you guys get it from a counseling standpoint. Why is it some couples come in and they listen and they learn and they apply, while the others is like, you've just wasted your time a little bit? And then it hit me, you know, growth mindset are the people that say, hey, my mind is open to maybe I should change my mind about some things. Maybe I'm not seeing things as clearly as I thought. Maybe there's room for adjustment in my thinking and not just in my spouse's thinking. While this fixed mindset says it is what it is. This is what it looks like for the two of us to be married. This is what our difference is equal to be. And there is no changing my mind. And when people say that before a book or a marriage event, that this is not going to work, I'll say you're exactly right. It's not with that mindset. And I don't mean to sound callous, but and I don't know what leads to fixed or growth mindset, like all the elements that go into that. I just know that when it's fixed, not much can get fixed.
Yeah, that they have to come into it really, really open and believing that there is hope and believing that there's good in their partner. Because you're right, they come in with their arms folded. They're just like, you know, I dare you to teach me anything. Yeah, they're already closed. This fixed mindset. It is what it is. Or this person is just a jerk, and they're going to be like this, forever. Yeah. So it's so true.
Or sometimes the client themselves will say, "I am who I am." Right? I am who I am. You got to accept me. I am who I am. How many times have I heard that? Wish I had a nickel for every time I've heard that. I am who I am. That's so discouraging.
It is. And I hope that I'm not, I am who I am. Right. I think we all need to be moving toward growth. I mean, I think what if I'd had that thinking, or we'd had that thinking when we were in our 20s, right? Or, you know, we'd look back and say, wow, that's stunted growth. Like, I don't want to be like I was when I was 20 years old. I was making horrible decisions. And so I think there's just so much hope, right? There's so much hope with a growth mindset. You know, there's a retreat center close to us that does marriage intensives. And the only question that they are required to answer yes to is, do you believe that God could do a miracle? And if they can answer yes to that question, they're like, come on. But it's basically a question of growth versus fixed mindset. In other words, is your mind open just this far to growth? Because if it is, lots of great things can happen.
Yeah.
Love the question.
That is key. And Ted, you mentioned that in order for a shift in our relationships to happen, first, we have to be honest with ourselves in a handful of areas. The first area is to really dig deep and ask, and you say, what do I think about myself, right? We imagine that it's the first question we ask ourselves for good reason, right? Why is that?
Well, I'm going to keep it really real with you guys. This was almost the chapter that I excluded from the book because I get so vulnerable about it, and I would cut and paste between edits. Like, I thought, once this is in print, like, this is vulnerable about myself. You know, it's one thing to talk about other people's, you know, being vulnerable for them, you know, with permission, of course. But I kept showing it to my wife and I said, what do you think? And she was like, why would you not? This is the best part. And so it turns out as normal, she was correct. And I actually start the book, you know, after the intro chapter, what do you think about yourself? Because I so struggled with what I thought about myself from as long as I can remember. And I've got theories of why. But I actually called this voice. You guys are going to go, okay, let's stop recording. This guy's off his rocker. But I call him Fred in my head.
I love it.
You know, I've got Fred in my head. And let me just tell you, friends, Fred is a jerk. And Fred's very mean to me. And so when I would talk about Fred in their head, and there's exercise in the book that's been proven for decades to help people get Fred out of their head. But when I shared this, I couldn't believe how many people would come up to me afterwards talking about the Fred in their head. I mean, I'm talking about, I've had, you know, CEOs of companies come up, highly successful CEOs, say to me, this one guy, I bet he's probably around 75. He said, my Fred has been mean to me my whole life. And it breaks my heart, right? It breaks my heart that this is, people listen to this voice. And no one ever told me in school, and no one even told me in church, that I need to pause and think about what I'm thinking. Like, is this even correct? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it kind? Because how we think about ourselves so determines who our spouse is going to experience. And, you know, one example is, you know, you're driving home from work and you've had a meeting, and your friend says, hey, you know, that meeting did not go well for you. You know, I know you can't read minds, but I can. And I could tell your boss is thinking that was awful and you need to get out of here. And I just can't believe you keep doing this over and over again. Like, oh, you should be afraid. Now, imagine with all that swirling around in your head, you enter your home, your spouse goes, hi. You're like, hi. You know, you can feel that. And, you know, or another example is social media, right? You know, we scroll and we look at everybody else's highlight reels. We compare what we know about ourselves with what we don't know about someone else. And we always come up the loser with Fred, you know, going, oh, wow. You know, their feet are always in magical locations at beaches and your feet are always at work. So, ooh, you know, or, you know, oh, they're way more attractive or thinner or whatever those things are. And it just impacts our ability to be present, to be happy, to be full of joy. It determines the type of person that our spouse is living with, right? And I just find it so important for us to stop and say, hey, wait a minute. And when I'll tell people, if you can use an exercise that seems so simple that you're not going to believe, you're not going to trust it because it is so simple. But if that little exercise can change the Fred in my head, then it can change anyone's. And again, it's an ongoing process. Had to do a little bit of Fred work this morning. And so it's an ongoing thing, right? And I didn't know that, especially I released the book and I thought, well, Fred's out of my head and here goes the book. And then Fred's like, I don't know about
that. Not so fast.
This doesn't even work for you. And now you've just put it in print and on a video series. Good job. I mean, and I'm teasing about it, but I did a nosedive for about 3 or 4 weeks of, oh, what have you done? Mm-hmm. Right. And it was his voice. So I just think it's so important, you know, people are listening right now, and just stop and go, no one's ever questioned me to think what I'm thinking about myself or even question my thoughts in general. What if they're not true about me?
Mm-hmm. So true. I think that's the one statement that captured my attention the most, Ted, is what I think about myself radically determines how my spouse experiences me at any given moment. And so when I've got Fred in my head, it's like, oh my gosh, I hate myself. That's kind of a common phrase. So you're not alone. So I show up a certain way and my husband, Ben, automatically thinks I'm mad at him, right? I come across as if something's wrong with him. When in reality, it was just all me, myself, and I. Don't you find this area even more challenging than all the others? The one that starts with self?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we're with us and Fred all the time, right? And it just becomes our net. We let our brains run on autopilot, especially about ourselves. And so this is the toughest one, but this is actually the one for me where I've gotten the most freedom and release. And like, if somebody said, you could put something into the world to help people with, you know, give me one thing, it's probably going to be this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's powerful.
That is powerful. It feels like we know from the research that this negativity bias that we're born with, right? That we're born with 5 times as many neurons that are wired for negativity and threat for every one that's wired for opportunity and positivity. So you're right, Ted. Even at a presentation or something that I've given, I'm sure that you've given, and you get this feedback that's great. And then you get one comment. Man, that's like, oh, you know, that was a sleeper or whatever. He lost me or, and that's what I focus on the rest of the day. I have to catch myself. And I think our listeners, you've got to catch yourself with that friend. Just capture it. Be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just pause. At first, just recognize the voice and be like, okay, yeah. And don't sit there and feed Fred, right? Don't sit there and feed Fred.
It's Fred. You are not good for my marriage, Fred.
No. Well, and there's been something so powerful about people naming it something other than themselves. It's a little easier to believe it's not as true when we separate it from us. when we go, wait a minute, hold on a minute. This isn't true. But yeah, Fred's a jerk, you guys. Fred's a jerk. But we're not powerless to Fred, is what I'm saying. Is like we're just, and again, there's been these exercises around for 30 plus years that have amazing results. And I will, as I teach this live, I'll say, okay, I'm about to show you something. It's going to be so simple that you're going to go, that can't work. And I get it, because I am one of those kind of thinkers. I'm like, they'll go, this isn't work. And just watching people get some freedom, especially myself, it's been so fun.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in.
Awesome. Okay, the next key question we've got to ask you, Ted, is what do I think about my spouse, right? You believe that marriage isn't as complicated as it is just close, right? Please enlighten us. Is it true that how I think about my spouse determines how I feel about them?
It is, and it determines how you treat them. You know, it is when we start running these thoughts about our spouse, you know, what narrative, and I'll just ask people listening, what's the narrative that you're telling yourself about your spouse? Like if you were writing a Netflix series of, and you're casting your spouse, how are you casting them? Because you're going to live like it's true. One example I use in the book, and this is nothing I'm proud of whatsoever, but hopefully somebody could, this would be helpful, is early in our marriage, I remember one day determining after a long string of events going, I think my wife's manipulative. I think she always gets what she wants. I was outside mowing the grass. I don't know what it is with me and mowing the grass, but me and Fred are hanging out and it doesn't lead to good things. But I went, she's manipulative, because we just moved and I convinced myself that I was not part of that process and that she had manipulated that process. And so I think when you hang that kind of banner or you put that type of badge on your spouse, you declare that it's confirmation bias. You're going to search for information just to confirm that this is true. And that's a dangerous thing to call your spouse and like going, how would I respond to her? Right. Like I'm not a mean guy. And so it's more subtle, you know, but it's like, how was I treating her? Was I being more generous? What if she needed me? And it just changes things. Flip side of this, if your confirmation bias is, you know, you're telling your spouse, you know what, I'm going to pause and I'm going to think about what's great about them. And I'm going to write that down and I'm going to remember that. And before I have a conversation about something tough, I'm going to read that. It changes things, right? It changes things.
Yeah, it totally does. We've had a guest on, a good friend of mine called, his name is Wally Goddard. And he once said this, that he said, and I'll never forget it. He says, irritation is an invitation. And I thought, oh man, when I feel irritated with my spouse, it's an invitation, not for me to go down that Fred pathway on my spouse, but an invitation for me to see her with compassion from a different perspective. Because if I think, man, why does she do this every time? If I'm looking for it, dang it, I'm going to find it. That's the principle. Whatever you're searching for, you will find whatever you're looking for, whether it's good or evil, right?
You will. And there's a, you know, I don't know if all your listeners are Christians or not. This works regardless of your faith. Philippians 4:8, if you'll run your spouse through this filter, because it starts with what is true. Mm-hmm. So this is very protective. If what is true, if someone's being abused, what's truth is, that's not okay. Has to be handled immediately. Get safe, mm-hmm. right? So, but what's also true, like for instance, when we were moving, what was true is we decided together. What was also true is she was better adjusting than I was. And then the next question, what's noble? Well, as noble is we married when she was 23 and I was 25 and she moved and lived with just, moved across the country. Left her parents, everybody she knew, and lived in my life, went to a job that she didn't love while I loved mine. And I thought, that's noble. And then all of a sudden we move back. We've been here 3 months and she's manipulative. That, friends, is not true, right? And so it's just a shift in thought that I wish I had had at the time. But man, when you start listing who your spouse is and remembering that, I mean, that was one of the things that the brain research shows. It's positive illusion. Again, it's the ability to focus on what you do love and not focus on what you don't. It's just so powerful.
Ooh, it is. And boy, and it's so much easier said than done, just like everything else in life, right, my friends?
Yes.
Because just the other night, I got caught in that negative loop. And it's like, oh, I know better. I know better than that. Where is my list of 10 things I love about this man? Where's that list? I don't even think about the list, to tell you the truth. Okay, so we've got these great three questions so far. What do I think about myself? What do I think about my spouse? And the third one, Ted, you say, what do I think about my spouse's emotions? Boy, isn't that true? I don't know about you, Dave, Ted, and listeners, but do you ever think in those moments when you look at your spouse sometimes, like bewildered, like I was the other night, and I think, I can't believe they just acted like that. Or I can't believe you think that joke is funny. It's kind of almost like, what's wrong with you? So what do I think about my spouse's emotions? Tell us more, Ted.
This for me was one of the most powerful, this was probably second to the what do I think about myself, most powerful thing for me personally is I had missed the importance of empathy all these years. And I thought the reason I missed it is because it sounds a little squishy to me. Like, oh, it's something I get when I get older and more empathetic. And then you see that it's a power move, right? It's such a big thing. And I also realized that I was missing it because I'm not naturally good at it. Like, I always want to fix my wife. Like, I, you know, and one night she said to me, I don't want you to fix this. I want you to feel this. And so when she has emotions that make, which can sometimes make us uncomfortable, right? Sometimes we want to rescue our spouse from their emotions, or we want to not encourage you to have that emotion ever again. Whatever that is, instead of just pushing it away or trying to talk it away or give advice away, to join in that with them, you know, empathy, I used to think was just about the tough stuff, but it's also about the good stuff. Like if your spouse, this is somebody listening, I get really excited about this. This is huge. When your spouse smiles, you smile back. You know, if they laugh at something, you just go ahead and fake that laugh, baby. You laugh with them. If they get excited about, you know, football season starting and you're like, oh no, not that noise all Saturday long again, get excited with them. If Christmas is coming and you're like, you're more like the Grinch and they're more like Clark Griswold, like don't be a killjoy, right? That's what it's basically doing. And I think, you know, when we got married, we basically got married because we said we enjoy each other so much. We want to enjoy each other for a lifetime. And then we pull back the joy. So I think on empathy, you know, if somebody wants to work on something that's fun, that's encouraging, that's pretty quick, is when they're excited, put down your phone, look at them and smile and just think, you're adorable. I mean, like my wife gets so excited about getting things on sale, for instance. Like she doesn't spend a lot, but she's really good with money. So she doesn't shop a lot. But when she does, she takes down the global economy. And like she came in the other day with bags, just stuff from Old Navy. And I knew what was about to have it. I call it sale reveal days, where she will buy stuff and she'll say, come here, let me show you something. And then she'll go, I bought this. And then I bought this. And then she'll say, guess how much? And what I used to do is, I don't know, just tell me, you know, and that would shut her down instead of now just going, hey, let's do this. I'm going to be like, I'm on a game show. It's like, I'm going to guess $149, you know, but why wouldn't I celebrate that with her? Right. It took 2 minutes. And here's what everybody listening already knows is life is tough, right? Life gets like, it's really tough. We got to snag these moments of joy and it takes moments. So are you a smiler? Is that a word, smiler? It should be. Are you a celebrator? Right. And just to do that with your spouse, it just, you know, because what the research shows is the reason we get so excited to tell somebody something when we're excited is it increases the feel good chemicals in our brains and our bodies. So we search for somebody to tell. And I'm like, ooh, don't let anybody out celebrate with your spouse than you. Like, you want to be the first one that comes to mind, regardless of topic. Does that make sense?
You bet. And then what if you are a little more bewildered, where it's like, oh gosh, I just so don't agree. Like, let's say somebody might be angry at the driver, the anonymous drivers on the road. What do you suggest? How do I embrace my spouse's emotion then?
Yeah. And especially when their emotions towards you, right? Like that become, it's really easy. You know, it's easier to celebrate their quirky things that they love to celebrate, like cheap clothes from Old Navy. This is way more difficult. I think people will withhold empathy because they don't agree. And agreeing and validating is two different things. you know, if you could just let them know the emotion and the topic that you get it, I can tell you're really frustrated with the kids right now. That's going to be soothing to their brains and to their, or I can tell that you are really angry that I'm late, and that's understandable. And to say just, that's two words that we've put into our marriage that's been massive, is that's understandable. Oh, I'm so frustrated right now. You know what? That's understandable. Recently, I'd been traveling way too much speaking. I was so tired. And Nancy asked me the following day, she said, how you doing? Because you know how you can just tell with your spouse when there's something up. She said, how you doing? I said, well, to be honest, I'm really tired and a little bit depressed. And she goes, and that's understandable. And I was like, oh, this must be what she wants from me all the time. Right. And so I think it's just those moments of just acknowledging where they are. Research shows is really soothing to them. It's, you know, and what I would say too, like, don't give them a lot of logic when they're working on the emotional part of the brain. It's not going to open a door that's closed. Like, and what the research shows is that logic doesn't lead to logic, that empathy leads to logic. Is just looking at just it. And when you give them eye contact, it creates empathy in your brain for them. Isn't that fascinating? I just thought that was just because when we're angry, this is me at least, I can't speak for everybody, but when I'm angry, I tend to look around as I'm giving my speech, you know, yep. And instead going, no, if you're going to be brave enough to say that, then say it to her face.
That's great.
Right.
I noticed that Friday night. I wasn't looking directly at him, and I think it would have softened my heart.
That's incredible. Right. I love that, Ted. That the power of that emotional mirror. And we can even extend it. I mean, this is a stronger marriage connection, but there's parents, right, who are listening to this as well. Doesn't it work as well when you're mirroring your children's emotions, whether they're coming, they've had a hard day, or they're really excited about something, no matter what it is, if it was they beat Fortnite, right, and they're on the computer and they're so excited about something, dang it, you get excited because they're excited. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And I've had to learn this with my daughters, especially because, you know, they're one of them's in high school. And it's like one day they come in and these friends are like the best friends ever. The next day, they're the worst friends ever. And then the next day we're going back to, and I'm like, and one day I was like, wait, I thought you just said yesterday. And my wife looks at me and shakes her head like, logic has no place here. Logic has zero place here. You know, and with her, it's the hardest thing because I'm her parent and I need to lead, guide, and direct her, right? No, not here. You know, people say, isn't there a time and place for advice? And I'm like, yes, but when they're emotional, it's not the time nor the place. They're just not set up. Their bodies and brains are not set up to hear that. You know, I think that's why some people can talk about things in, you know, in a marriage conference or retreat, or even in your offices, because their brains and their bodies aren't immediately triggered. So they have more of that logical part of their brain that can listen. And I found for couples, especially, and even as parents, sometimes we only talk about frustrating things when we're in the middle of frustrating things. Like we only talk about the budget when one of us, we declare, has done it wrong. We only talk about parenting when we feel like the other one's missed the mark. You know, we only talk about sex when the offer's been declined. But when you have a little bit more of a moment where you're both, your frontal lobes are kind of checked in, your body's like, hey, can we talk about this in a different calm approach? It's amazing what couples can talk about.
Man, well said. And the timing, that's a great segue into this next one. Ted, you talk about how do I respond to my partner? And you mentioned that apologizing is great. I love this. But not needing to apologize is even greater. Talk to us about controlled emotions and what are the secrets to kind of mastering ourselves, controlling ourselves?
Oh, friends, this, I say I had ADHD long before it was cool to have it. just when I would just get in trouble. You need to sit down and pay attention was my medication in that as a kid. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I look back now. And so the constant question from my dad was, what were you thinking? I was like, absolutely nothing before I did it. Not a darn thing. So I think, so part of that is for ADHD. And I like using this example because it was like, if ADHD people can wrap their arms around this, anybody can, is lack of impulse control. And so you immediately jump to action. And one of the things I could not believe that I saw in the research was the same part of your brain that's triggered by your spouse. And you guys know this, but maybe a listener doesn't. In the amygdala, it's the same part that's triggered if you were put your hand on a hot stove. You immediately pull your hand away. And I say, thank God for the amygdala, right? But it's too efficient when it comes to relationships sometimes. And so you are talking out of this emotional part. You're talking out of the emotional part, and then the logical part of you that goes, wait a minute, I want to talk like an adult. I want to talk loving. I want to remember the best of them. That part is offline. So the biggest thing, and I give five intentional thoughts in the book, and this is a one word thought, and that is pause. Just pause. Like if you say with your kids and with your spouse, like to me, I have never, ever regretted a pause. I have never, ever regretted a pause with my kids. I have never, ever regretted a pause with my wife, and just to go, especially when I'm triggered to be angry or impulsive. It's just to go. I mean, people say, talking about bite your tongue, bite it. I mean, like I have to literally bite my tongue sometimes or pinch myself, like don't say anything. And so I do think apologies are great, and our kids are great apologers. Apologers, again, I keep making up words. They're great at apologies because we've had to apologize to them so much. But as great as apologies are, sometimes the damage is, it's still there. It feels, I mean, apology is a step toward healing, but man, sometimes we say things you're like, whoa, you know, careless words stab like a sword, right? And stabbing is an event. Wise words lead to healing, but that's a process. And so, and we remember events, don't we? Especially the hurtful ones. And you know, everybody listening right now can remember something that their parents said or some coach or some teacher or some kid said about you. I mean, I'm talking about in vivid detail. I had a man came up to me after speaking one time, and he was 80 years old, and he goes, I remember my mom saying to me that she loved me, but she didn't like me. The man was using a cane, and it was as vivid as him. Mm. Yeah. And so I get excited about this part. Just pause. Just take a breath. You can always say things. You can't unsay things, right? Just like to go pause. And if someone's listening and you're married to somebody or you want to talk about it right now, I want to talk about this right now. And they're saying, I need a break. You're setting yourself up to lose. Like my oldest son he is so smart. But he would look at me, I just want to talk to my dad. I want to talk to my dad right now. And, you know, as a dad, you're hearing that he wants to talk to his dad. And I finally looked at him one day and I went, you really don't want to talk to your dad right now. Like you really don't. Dad needs a second. And here's the thing, what you got to be and careful in the pause that you don't go back and think of the sharper way to say what you just said. I used to do that a lot. I take a pause and I come back going, oh, here's a point I left out. Like
loaded for bear.
Yeah. Load for bear. I'm going to say this even meaner than I said it the first time. So use the pause to breathe and to go, okay, let me go back. I care more about my person than I do my need to be right. I care more about my person than I do this topic. I care more about saying this in a way that they're actually going to hear it. Cause they're not going to hear it in anger, right? They're just going to hear the anger. So pause and go, okay, let me look at my things about my person. Okay, that's right. They are noble. Oh, that's right. They are generous. Oh, that's right. They are so full. Okay, now let's try it again. But just that pause. Just take a breath. I used to have a friend named Dave, and every time I'd have lunch with him, it was like talking to somebody via satellite. Like you would ask him a question, and he would do that awkward via satellite pause that we see on the news. Like, hey, so how's the Olympics in Rio? And then they'd be like, well, it's going great. Well, that was Dave. And he would have these pauses. And I came out and told my wife, I said, I finally understand it. I think Dave thinks before he speaks. Imagine that. But it's so odd in our culture, right? But just to take pause is so huge.
Oh, I like it. All right. So we got, what do I think about myself? What do I think about my spouse? What do I think about my spouse's emotion? How do I respond to my partner? And now the last one, what is the purpose of marriage to me? You encourage us to ask ourselves that. In the middle of the muddle, we often say to ourselves, what is this all about? Like, did I sign up for this, right? Unreliable finances, difficult parenting, in-laws, intimacy, infertility. Oy. But you say knowing the purpose of marriage is key. And what is that key, please, Ted? What is that key to you?
Yeah, the key to me personally is that I believe as a follower of Jesus, that it's to reflect the love of Jesus. That's the marketing tool that he chose to use. And it was based off of submit to one another, right? You say, how do I do this? Is submit to one another. In other words, I'm going to put your needs ahead of my own. I'm going to go ahead and love first. I'm just going to love first. I'm not going to do the math, you know, and this idea of mutual submission, it is, you know, terrible at keeping score and awful at math, right? And so it's like, I'm going to go ahead and love. I'm not going to go, hey, wait, didn't I just take the kids yesterday to school? Isn't it their turn? And it's like, wait a minute. Well, I did, you know, I did the dinner tonight. Can't they at least go and do X, Y, Z? Because we're really good with, you know, giving ourselves really accurate, generous scores, right? Because we're with us, you know. But just this thing of going, I believe the purpose for me as a Christian is to reflect the love of Jesus. And for some people, it might be, you know, that we want someone to do life with and do it really, really well to model relationships to our kids. For some people, you know, whatever their purpose is, but to stop and say, we committed to each other for a lifetime and we want to do that well. It's just having that in front of you. You know, for companies to work, they have to have their purpose right in front of them. And it helps them to celebrate the victories. They have the benchmarks. Oh, we're heading where we're supposed to be going. But it also keeps them going. Like for COVID, like for a lot of businesses that, you know, if they were in the service business, like our purpose is to pour into the community. You know, while obviously feeding our families. But that purpose made them say, hey, this is a really tough time. No one's coming to the restaurant now. Are we going to survive? But it makes them stay in the game to figure that out. So many people figured things out during COVID and they hung in there because they remembered their purpose. And so I think that's so huge for marriage. You know, what's the purpose of this whole thing? Like, why are we doing this? Because if we don't, it's really easy to give up.
Yeah. Yeah. It keeps us committed. Yeah. I like that.
And the final question we like to ask each guest, Ted, is what do you believe is a key to a stronger marriage connection?
You know what my wife would say after hearing all this hoogly googly coming out of my mouth? No, she's very funny. She can take all of this. She applies it way quicker than me and makes it way simpler than me. She would say this. She would say, think kindly and be kind. Because she said, when we struggled in our marriage, we did not think kindly and we did not act kindly. Now we've worked really hard to think kindly and to act kindly. So it's not as complicated as we can make it out to be.
Yeah, man, I love it. That's a great answer to that question. Let me ask you, Ted, share with us our friends here on the podcast, where can they find you and learn more about your books and resources? And we can add those to our show notes.
Sure. If they'll go to forusmarriage.com, forusmarriage.com, and on all social is at forusmarriage.
That is great. And we will add that for us marriage, both on social media and the website. And of course, you can find your book, I'm sure Amazon, at that website and other places as well, I'm guessing.
Sure.
All right, Ted, before we let you go, we like to invite you and each of us will kind of share, reflect on our time today. We call it our takeaway of the day. If there is a takeaway message that you hope our listeners will remember, what is that?
I think if I have to go back to one thing, if you go, okay, we've talked a lot, talked about research. I think mostly I would say to ask the question, you know, ask yourself, what am I thinking about me and what am I thinking about my spouse? To just really have a little bit of time with yourself on that. You know, if someone's running or in their car, like to turn this off and don't turn on anything else, which I know is an insane thought for me personally and for most people, but just to stop and go, let me think about that. No one's ever told me to think about what I'm thinking. And I think that'll matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I love this. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day with our discussion with Ted?
I'm going to put this in bold letters somewhere. I just wish you could see you through my eyes.
That's magical. Yeah, I love it.
I think so too. Yeah. And you, Dave, what's your greatest takeaway from our time together today?
I've absolutely loved this, Ted. I think we should have you on just every week, Ted. Should we just start that? This has been fascinating, actually. I love thinking about that confirmation bias, and that may be like listeners are like, what is that? It's essentially that if we think something, then we're going to confirm, we're going to look for ways to confirm. If we think our spouse is so messy, then we're going to look for the messes and we'll find it. If we think they're rude, then we're going to look for and actually be attracted to those things that they say that are not very kind. But if we look for the good, oh man, we'll find the good. We'll always find what you're looking for. So think for and look for the good stuff and we'll be able to find it. Ted, this has been amazing, my friend. We thank you so much for taking time out of your day to share with us and our listeners so much wisdom and your insights related to thinking, being able to kind of simply pause and think. I love that intentional pause and thinking about it. So thank you so much for your time today.
Well, and thank you guys. I just want to affirm and go, I'm glad these two are on the team, you know. I'd say people that work in the marriage space, we're all part of the nerd herd, but I, you know, a little bit, but I just want to say to like, for you guys, I just want to affirm and thank you for doing what you do and figuring this thing out technically and figuring out how to make this thing work. You know, we were talking about before the show started about how we're going to do this. So thank you for doing that every week. I know that you guys could be doing a lot of other things. So thank you for that. I know it matters. Yeah,
we appreciate that. And you're right, Ted. We all are. We're on the same team. We're all trying to spread this message of hope and happiness. And for us, we're helping couples trying to find a stronger marriage connection. So that's all for now, our friends. Thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you next time.
Yep. Bless you, Ted. And remember, it's the small and simple changes that create a stronger marriage connection. Take care now.
We'll see you. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org. where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.